You are listening to The Andrew Miller Show. This episode was recorded when the show had a different name. Same show otherwise. Anyway, enjoy. You are listening to Get Yours Today. Get something out of your taxes and public budgets. That's what we're talking about in this episode. Participatory budgeting. Participatory budgeting is a democratic process in which community members, such as you, decide how to spend part of a public budget. It sure sounds better than leaving it up to the politicians everyone complains about, but elects anyway. Participatory budgeting started in Porto Alegre, Brazil, in 1989 as an anti-poverty measure that helped reduce child mortality by nearly 20%. Since then, it has spread to over 7,000 cities around the world and has been used to decide budgets from states, counties, cities, housing authorities, schools, and other institutions. Our guest for this episode is Elizabeth Cruz, who is the director of Democracy Beyond Elections and is with the Participatory Budgeting Project. What is the Participatory Budgeting Project? It is a nonprofit organization that empowers people to decide together how to spend public money, primarily in the US and Canada, and has empowered more than 400,000 people to directly decide how to spend $300 million in public funds in 29 cities. Let's keep those numbers growing and get what we want and need. Thank you, Elizabeth, for being on the show. How are you doing today?
Of course, I'm doing great. It's a beautiful fall day here in Brooklyn.
Oh, indeed. I'm not too far away. I'm in New Jersey, so
Nice.
Experiencing the same weather.
Great.
Yep, over in Bergen County.
Nice.
Yeah, definitely. So starting with a pretty basic question, how would you explain participatory budgeting to someone who's never heard of it?
Sure. So participatory budgeting is community-led decision-making over public budgets. So the way that it works is that some folks come together, they form a steering committee, and they decide kind of what are the rules, who's going to vote, who's going to submit ideas, how are they going to get the word out, et cetera, what's going to work for their community. And then they're going to solicit ideas for proposals. The community will submit ideas for how those funds should be spent. Then they'll take those proposals, turn them into proposals, and then turn that into a ballot. And then that'll go back out to the community for a public vote. And then the government entity or body will implement what the community votes on. So it's real community decision-making power. It's not just putting ideas out there. It's not just going to a meeting or filling out a survey. It's actually community-led decision-making power.
Excellent. And I understand it goes on at all levels, ranging from school boards all the way to actual communities, actual townships as well. Mm-hmm. And when I first heard of it, you know, I've seen it on a couple different levels. So therefore, it's probably proposed, you know, depending on who's proposing it or who's trying to push it, you know, different versions of it or different ways, depending on, you know, the budget, for example, and where it comes from. For example, and again, yeah, I don't know if this is far different than how you would promote it, or does that just depend on the level of government we're talking?
Sure. So there are some components that we say are participatory budgeting. So that is, you know, the community gets to decide is the first and foremost. So it's them like making a decision together about how those funds are spent and having that be honored and implemented. There are different models for it. It's used all over the world. In Brazil, where it started, in Porto Alegre, they use a slightly different model than the one that we put forward here in the US. And it's kind of different all over the country, all over the world, really. But yeah, that component we think is essential.
Oh, definitely. So basically, like, say if a town wants to have it, like, would it be done in a way where anyone who, you know, lives in that town, like that's their home of record, that's their address where they officially live, would be able to participate in it?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I think it depends. So in New York, what we've seen is they do it by district. So if you live, the city council members use their discretionary funds. They use around $1 million. Sometimes it's been a little bit more, 2 million, as much as 2.5. And that those funds go to their district. So their district gets to decide how those funds are going to be spent. And anyone in the district gets to like be involved and make that decision.
Oh, okay. Because the first time I heard of something like this was in 2017 in New Jersey. There's a gubernatorial election. And one of the candidates running is with the Libertarian Party. Now, this isn't something that everyone in that party agrees with. This isn't something that's like on like the party's platform per se. You know, there's some in that party that are behind this kind of thing, some that may not be, or maybe they are depending on how it's done. Yeah, but since he was running for governor, it was on a state, you know, a statewide thing. And he called it fiscal democracy. The candidate's name was Peter Roorman, running as a libertarian in 2017 for governor of New Jersey. He called it fiscal democracy. And the way it worked, if I'm remembering correctly, was, you know, that party is all about getting rid of taxes and all. So it's like all these different taxes in New Jersey, just get rid of them all. You know, like all these user fees, all this tax, the income, like the property tax, I have to just get rid of it all. And then everybody just pays a 10% income tax. And then from there votes on how to spend that. And I was thinking that, like, all right, I mean, the concept of people choose, you know, just paying a tax and choosing how their tax dollars are spent, you know, sounds like a good idea in theory, but how, but would it be good in practice? And, you know, has it ever worked before? Because this was before I had any idea that it started in that, it went on other places. So it sounded like a good idea. Like it's something that could bridge a lot of ideological gaps, because we always hear how politically divided we all are and everything. Because, you know, if so, even if someone does want a more progressive government and everything, you know, voting for someone who's running on that doesn't always cut it, because they have a whole other legislature to deal with. And if they can't get anyone to work with them, then none of it goes through. Right. So if there's some ideas on there that you want, that you know other people want, even if they don't want the rest, at least those could go through if you have something like this in effect. So that's why I always thought it was a good idea. But again, you know, it depends on how it goes. And if it's a 10% of income, I mean, is that just everybody regardless of where they get their income? Or is that just people who work and fill out a W-2 or a 1099? You know, so that's something that I, you know, I'm not clear on, like if someone's trying to push that kind of model of it, or it doesn't include people who are retired, like, all right, well, how much are you getting in your pension or Social Security? All right, well, if you pay 10% of that, you could have a say on, you know, how the this tax money is spent. I mean, I don't know.
Right. So I am not familiar with that candidate or his proposal on fiscal budgeting. It sounds very interesting. We haven't seen participatory budgeting with a full government budget. So we haven't seen like the city of New York say, okay, we're going to spend our $1 billion budget and the community is going to decide. It's mostly been a piece of it, a piece of the budget. But what we have seen, there's a really great paper by some folks that was written for the World Bank around the effects of participatory budgeting that shows that people are more likely and willing to pay taxes when they have a say in how those funds are being spent. So it was actually a paper that was written around kind of the impacts of participatory budgeting in Brazil. And they looked at all of these different municipalities and people are, they want, they're more willing to pay taxes when they have a say in how those funds are being spent via participatory budgeting. So it's really interesting. And like I said, I think what's really great about participatory budgeting is that it's a process, but it's a really simple process. It's not just, you know, filling out a survey and having two or three things rise to the top and then having the government take those two or three things. It's really about engaging the community on a deeper level from the very beginning, from the design of the process to the implementation of the process, all the way through really engaging the community.
No, that's good. Yeah, because, you know, people are, a lot of people, well, if taxes are high, people are always going to complain about it, because, you know, any kind of high price is like, whoa, hey, you know, I can only afford so much. And especially if they don't see certain things being fixed. I know New Jersey people will complain about how high their taxes are and complain about like potholes that aren't being fixed on the road too. So then it's like, well, what are we paying for then? Whereas if everyone has a say in it, even if it's just on a community level, at least they know, all right, well, this is what it pertains to, this community here. And I live here, you know, I'm paying into it, obviously, mm-hmm. being a taxpayer one way or another. And if they have a say in it, then yeah, they're willing to pay for something that they get something in return for.
Right, absolutely. And it's kind of, we've seen the word co-governments really rise to the top a lot. It's about kind of not just electing someone to represent you or go do a thing, but it's about, like, we're all on this together, where elected officials and government officials are going to share power with their community to actually have a say in how some of those, sorry if it's loud here, how some of those decisions are made. And it's budgeting, but it also could be policymaking, participatory policymaking. We've seen like citizen juries and other things across the world really take off. So I think this is there's a lot of momentum around the participatory democracy and community around the world.
And while it's been going on many places, mm-hmm. like, is there certain places where it's been like most successful that you like to use as an example when trying mm-hmm. to sell this idea to others?
Well, in New York, we started around 11 years ago. We started with 4 city council members. It's grown to about 34 city council members before COVID. They did put a pause on it for COVID just because it's really hard to engage the community in the way that you want to be able to engage them in the middle of a pandemic. So, but it really also really New York is we're the first city in the United States that has been able to codify participatory budgeting. So it's not just up to an elected representative to say, okay, I'm going to do participatory budgeting because I believe in community and I'm nice. It's now like actually in our city charter that we have to do a citywide participatory budgeting process. So that's still being planned. And that was just passed, I believe, in 2019. So we're still seeing that process play out. But that's been a really amazing success story here in New York. Yeah. In Paris or France, they do a big process, the federal government actually like gives some pots of money to their local municipalities to allocate through participatory budgeting. So Mexico does a really great process. And there are some processes that are just getting off the ground. You mentioned school boards, but we actually do it in schools. So in Phoenix, they've been doing it with their high schools, I think for about the past 5 years. They started off with a couple of schools, and now all of the high schools in Phoenix do participatory budgeting. It's student-led, it's part of their civics curriculum. So students are actually learning democracy by doing it. So they're able to engage their community, their school community, in budgeting for their school. So it's a really great kind of process to start folks young in their expectations of what government and what democracy should be and can look like.
Oh, that's amazing. And I know it started in Brazil in 1989. And there is something I read. I was reading a little bit about it. Porto Alegre is the birthplace of participatory budgeting. And this was at the World Resources Institute, where it says, as far as the good. I mean, I know on the participatory budgeting project website, it mentioned something like, when it started, it reduced infant immortality by 20%, if I read that correctly.
Yes, absolutely. Nice. And when it started in Porto Alegre, it was from a popular labor movement, the populist labor movement that came to power in Brazil and Porto Alegre in particular. And they were able to like actually use participatory budgeting to really shift resources to communities that had been left out and that had needed those public infrastructure projects and those things to help reduce infant mortality, to give people fresh drinking water, be able to provide that infrastructure that actually improved health outcomes.
Yes, because I'm reading further here about it. It contributed to more equitable distribution of city services. By 1997, sewer and water connections went up from 75% to 98%. Health and education budgets increased from 13% to about 40%.
Yes.
The number of schools quadrupled, and road building in poor neighborhoods increased fivefold. And the meetings grew from fewer than 1,000 people per year in 1990 to about 40,000 in 1999. So, I mean, that's all the good news. I mean, the only, like, I guess bad news that this piece mentions, you know, mainly comes, seems to come at the fault of like a higher level of government when they're like when the federal funding formula changed, something on those lines, or now like a bigger portion of their budget is a stream of revenue that does not require participatory budgeting. So maybe that like decreases the portion, how much of the portion of their overall budget is participatory now. But again, that's not a fault of the concept itself. You know, that's more like, you know, just like the country and its federal government itself. And then how much say. But as you were mentioning earlier, I mean, it's mostly local level school boards and things like that. So again, I mean, long as people are having some type of say in how, you know, any funding is being spent.
Yeah, I mean, and we have seen different pots of money. So I talked about like school, individual school budgets to city council district budgets, like municipal budgets. But we're also actually seeing this in federal budgets with particularly the ARPA funds that are coming out right now, the American Rescue Plan Act funds. There are two cities that have actually dedicated a pot of money from those funds to actually be allocated using participatory budgeting. So Grand Rapids, Michigan is having a $2 million process, and actually Los Angeles is moving forward a $10 million process. So that's actually something that we're working on with the Participatory Budgeting Project, but also the national coalition that I lead called Democracy Beyond Elections. We're actually launching a campaign to educate folks around how they can use participatory budgeting for the equitable allocation of those ARPA funds. So to ensure that the folks that have been most impacted by COVID and the pandemic are actually the folks that are at the center of how those, of making the decisions around how those funds are going to be used.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, do you face any type of opposition or naysayers when it comes to like promoting this idea?
Yeah, well, yes, we do. You know, sometimes elected officials, they spend a lot of time getting into power, a lot of time and money and effort getting into power. So sometimes they don't want to share that power with the community. Sometimes they think they know best. Sometimes that's right. Sometimes, you know, maybe they should look at this process and look at how it's not actually like giving up power, but sharing power with the community and how that can be helpful. We've seen I don't have this number, so I don't want to make it up off the top of my head, but I will say most elected officials that do participatory budgeting actually do get reelected because they built this relationship with their community. So that's one thing that we try to, you know, point to. We certainly don't get involved in elections or do anything like that, but it's about community building and building that trust and building that mutual accountability with their community. I'm trying to think of other pushback that we get. One of the things that we try to do at participatory budgeting is actually bring in an equity lens. So like you were talking about Brazil, it's like looking at that equitable allocation of funds. So how are we making sure that the folks with the most need are actually getting their share of these funds? And sometimes what you hear when you go to a community meeting or what you see is the squeaky wheel or the loudest person is actually like the one making the decision or the one like making sure that their voice is heard over others. But we see participatory budgeting as kind of an antidote to that. It's not about the loudest voice in the room. It's about the community really coming together to decide together and talking to each other about their needs and what their needs are. So there is pushback, but it's a win-win for elected officials, for equitable distribution of how these funds are spent. I will also say in New York and other places that I've seen, it's about who lives in the district or who lives or is involved in the community where the funds are being allocated. So that means that, you know, undocumented immigrants or students as young or youth as young as 11 in New York are able to vote and have a say on how those funds are being spent. So even like traditionally marginalized or disenfranchised communities are able to participate. Because they are paying taxes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's good to see it done in a way that's you know, that includes everybody who's in that constituency or jurisdiction,
right.
Everybody in, nobody out. Because some places that, like if they're doing it based on a certain stream of revenue from taxes, then the concern comes up, well, who will be left out? Because when I first heard the term participatory budgeting, it was this past year, some town in Minnesota, I think it's Burnsville, if I'm remembering correctly. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's like a member or two on the council there that wanted to have that participatory budgeting, they called it. But their way was from the revenue collected from property tax.
Mm.
And the thing about that is it just the people who are officially listed as property taxpayers who are going to be allowed to participate in it? Because if it's that, then that leaves out people who rent. It leaves out a lot of people who are still one way or another paying into it, because it's not a coincidence that places with high property taxes have high costs of rent too. So it still gets passed down. The cost still gets passed down.
Absolutely.
So, you know, would it exclude that? Or would it be, yeah, that's the stream of revenue that we're going to use that budget for and have people decide on. But everyone who lives here, since we're all paying it one way or another, does have a say. I mean, so that's the thing that, you know, that's the kind of question I'd want answered before I would support it. Like if I was in that town, like, okay, well, is everybody whose official address here able to vote on this, or just people who are listed as property taxpayers? Because it leaves out people who are still contributing to it, but since they're renting, you know, their name isn't on the record as it. So that's, you know, the only, so that was like one of two skepticisms about that. Another came from other people, like the mayor and other people in local government there, which is one I highly disagree with, which is, well, no, I mean, people elect us to do this. And it goes back to what we were saying about elected officials. And well, no, it's not, because we see how, especially say nowadays, how elections go in this country. A lot of time it's just people choosing a so-called lesser evil. So people know that, yeah, candidate A doesn't represent me as much. And there's a lot about candidate A I don't like. And I know there's a lot that they're not going to do for me, but candidate B is so much worse, so I better vote for candidate A. So that's why, yeah, people, instead they're going to get something rammed down their throats that, you know, it's coming from an elected official who only got elected because they won like by a percentage point in a low voter turnout election in the name of being the lesser evil.
Right.
So that's why I, you know, that kind of concern or that kind of argument to me falls flat. It's like, no, it's, you know, if that's how it's going to be, then we need this even more participatory budgeting. We need it even more because of that.
Absolutely. I mean, and we've seen that participatory budgeting actually improves voter turnout in the places where it happens. So people are more likely to participate in other forms of democracy when they're able to participate in deciding how part of a budget is spent. Like it's more meaningful to them. And we don't
definitely.
We don't believe that democracy just happens every 2 years or every 4 years or whenever you show up a polling place to vote. Democracy is what happens every day on the streets, in the parks, in the library. It's everything that we participate in as a community. So to me, this is a no-brainer that the community should have more of a say in how these funds are spent.
Yeah, definitely. Because, a lot could happen out of nowhere in 2 years or 4 years, as we've seen, you know, whether it's COVID or 9/11, anything. Yeah, definitely. And also, even if, when it comes to candidates and what they run on, I mean, one, are they truthful about it? Are they just saying things people want to hear just so they get elected? And even if they really are going to fight for everything they say they will, again, there's a whole other government body to work with. And if they don't have anyone that'll work with them, then none of it will go through. Whereas with this, hey, maybe at least one or two of those things can go through, because there may be some things that almost everyone agrees on. So that's still better than none of it going through.
Absolutely. And, you know, our democracy is broken to a certain extent. Corporate influence on our elected officials and the way that government works. Erodes trust in government. It also erodes the government actually doing things that the majority of the people want them to do, as opposed to what like corporations or moneyed interest want them to do. So this is also like an antidote and a way to like actually get more of what a community wants to happen actually in government.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the way to go. I mean, just let the people who are living under it and paying for it decide.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Absolutely.
To your earlier question around property taxes and who gets to, like, if you're using a public budget that's from property taxes, who gets to vote? We would say that if those funds are going to support an entire community, then that community gets to vote. It shouldn't be limited to, again, people who have means or people who have money. If it's serving a community, the community should decide.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's what I believe as well.
Absolutely.
And yeah, because if it is the other way around, then it'd be like, well, no, because then it leaves so many people out. And then that would disenfranchise a lot of people. And and it wouldn't be any better than corrupt and owned politicians deciding things at that point.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it should be, because everyone, even if their name's not listed as paying a certain tax, again, they're still paying one way or another, whether they're renting, or if even if they live there and they do a lot of their business there. I mean, everything finds its way up one way or another.
Buying goods and services with sales tax in their community.
Exactly.
Everybody's paying.
Exactly. So everybody should at least get something out of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. And if somebody, you know, wants to get this going on in their community, somebody who doesn't have this going on where they live, but they want to, and they think they could get other people on board with them if they go around talking about it, saying, hey, you know, here's an idea, let's do this. What would you say is the best way for them to go about that? Or where can they go for help?
Yeah, so we have a ton of resources on our website, participatorybudgeting.org. We have videos, some really great videos, intro videos about how to get started doing PB, intro videos about PB in schools. We even have a video for elected officials. So like elected officials who have done PB and are talking about how it affected their community and how it affected their candidacy or their time in office. So ton of resources on participatorybudgeting.org. Yeah, I would also, you know, we want to really spread participatory budgeting. We want to make sure that folks around the country are able to do this kind of work. So reach out to us to info@participatorybudgeting.org. We're happy to talk to you. We do provide some technical assistance and capacity building for organizations in the field and governments that want to do participatory budgeting. So we really want to help and support the folks that are trying to get this off the ground.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. So again, it's a participatorybudgeting.com, correct?
.org.
.org. That's right. Yeah.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah. And I have it right here too, .org. I should have known better to say .org.
No worries.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, participatorybudgeting.org. And yeah, there's all kinds of information on here. I know there's shows like where it's happened. And yeah, at first I used to, when I heard the idea, I'm like, oh, sounds good in theory, but is it good in practice? Is this just a pipe dream, or can it work out, or will it fail? I mean, has it happened anywhere? And then once I heard participatory budgeting, I looked it up, and then that's how I came across this site. And then I found out, no, it has been around a while, and it is going on in a lot of places. So that's good news. So that made me even more interested in the idea. And yeah, it is something that I'd like to see spread, especially if it's done in a way where it is, you know, all inclusive, like anyone who's within the district or the jurisdiction or constituency, whatever you want to call it, is able to participate in it, then yeah, that is something that it could bring a lot of people together too. I mean, you hear about all this like division that's going on, but I think this could bring a lot of people together because, you know, people will see they have more in common with each other than they think, especially if it's going on at the local levels.
Yes.
Because this is where everybody drives on the same roads, everybody drinks and bathes in the same water, everybody's near the same business districts. You know, that's why I'm very, you know, when it comes to, you know, calling out corrupt politicians, it's mostly like on the federal level and state level where it's like, oh, that guy accepted money from that. And, oh, that one is owned by big oil or big pharma or whatever. And they're or oh, both parties are corrupt. Ugh. Whereas on the local level, that's where I am not as critical as I probably should be, because it's like, oh, well, the square mile town. Oh yeah, that candidate coached baseball, or that one led the Boy Scout troop, or that one is a fireman. That one put on the first aid squad. They've been here a while. They really care about this community. Right. So of course they mean good, and they pay the same property taxes as everyone else here. They driving the same roads, the same infrastructure, the same this, the same that. So of course their interests are my interests too. So, that's where, maybe I'm not as awake or as skeptical or critical as I probably should be. Because then you see other local issues happening. Like you'll see a lot of things like, luxury apartments being built everywhere that everybody complains about. That everybody they keep electing keeps putting them there. So that's where it's like, right. Well, maybe it's time to wake up a bit and realize that, hey, you know what? There is buying and owning of politicians on the local level too. That's a whole other thing.
that's another podcast.
Exactly. That's a whole other thing. Went into a tangent there. But again, on the local level, people have more common interests that way. So this could really be a something that'll get more people involved too, and more people interested.
Your neighbors. It's your neighbors. It's your community. It's
exactly.
You know them, and if you don't know them, you want to. So it's a really great process for local democracy in action, local participatory democracy in action. So we're really excited to see it growing.
Definitely. And I look forward to seeing it grow more. So definitely happy to get the word out about it. So is there anything else that you'd like to plug?
I don't think so. I think we're good. Just participatorybudgeting.org. Also, if you want to check out the work of the National Coalition Democracy Beyond Elections, we're at democracybeyondelections.org. We have some really exciting stuff. We do participatory budgeting, but also participatory policy making. In addition to participatory budgeting, looking at some other models for how community-led decision-making can become the norm for how we do our democracy. So participatorybudgeting.org, democracybeyondelections.org.
All right, excellent. So everybody listening, if you want to have more say on how your tax money is spent or how the local budgets where you live are spent, it could become a reality. You could definitely make it happen because it's already going on. So definitely check it out. Definitely get involved. And you're one way or another, you're paying into it. So get something out of it. All right. So, thank you again for being on the show.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Definitely. Once again, that website is participatorybudgeting.org. When you visit the site, go to What is PE, then scroll down to Where is PB Happening, and you'll see a map of North America that shows every city and town that has it. You'll be amazed how much it caught on in the past few years. If you enjoyed this episode, listen to more episodes. Get Yours Today is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and a few other platforms. Do not hesitate to follow and support the show. Feel free to like and follow the Facebook page as well. Prior episodes have covered topics such as ranked choice voting, a national popular vote, open primaries, and ballot initiatives. You can also hear interviews with candidates running for office at the federal, state, and local levels. More interviews and discussions are on the way, so keep listening. In the meantime, peace out.